What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Baby, you can't drive my car. The Beatles are going to have to come back and do that song all over again. I'm Larry Rifkin along with John Krofcik. And why would I say that the Beatles, who gave us great lyrical content, would have to come back to rewrite Drive My Car, John? Why would I say that?
Well, just think of all the car songs that would have to come back.
Well, one of the songs, because I'm still in a band, I'm still rocking, and we do Riding in My Car, a great song by NRBQ. And, well, you can still ride in the car. You
That's
just can't
true.
Get behind the wheel anymore.
You can. What was that, the T-Bird song?
Yeah, well, all the Beach Boy tunes. Brian's going to have a long time to redo all those tunes. But the truth is that this whole concept of the driverless car, or the autonomous vehicle, as they call it, everybody's getting into this game, John.
They are. All the big guys are getting into it. So I think it's kind of scary, though. I don't know. I like the driver assist. I see now cars will even parallel park for
oh,
you.
Oh, that is, I love.
Which seems like
I'm
a cool
horrible
thing.
At parallel parking.
But, I don't know about letting it drive, especially knowing computers. You know, they computers are not totally flawless yet.
So. Well, the truth of the matter is that they've been talking about this for a while, and there are a lot of folks who are skeptical for a whole host of reasons. Number one, how are you going to get people out of their cars? People are driving these cars for a long time because they become so reliable. When you go back even 5, 6, 7 years, the reliability of cars has gotten so much better.
Since the Japanese took over car making, they really improved the car. So, you know, in the old days, you get 100,000 miles on a car, and that was ancient. Now you can go, you know, 500,000 easily.
Well, that to me is the most curious period, when you've got people driving and not giving up their old cars, and then the driverless cars. And right. You have to do some infrastructure redesign in order to make certain that some of the peculiarities, I would imagine, of many of our roadways today that have been patched and rejiggered just to keep them online, that you're going to need a little more certainty for the artificial intelligence to know what it's doing. And then you've got our intelligence, which can be distracted, interrupted, and some of us have more facility than others. So I think that period of, say, 20 years, when we're both going to have driver and driverless cars, look out, pal. It's going to be crazy.
I don't know. You know, maybe to begin with, they'll make, you know, how they have these lanes on the highway that are just for, you know, what do they call them?
Yeah, lanes? The HOV lanes.
HOV lanes.
So you think they're going to have that for the autonomous
cars? Maybe they'll have an autonomous. Maybe they'll build like a separate.
I don't know, John. The problem is, doesn't that defeat the whole notion that you can go anywhere in a driverless car over time, and that's the benefit of having one? I mean, if you've got to build out all these lanes for something that's only for a transition period of 20 years, I mean, we've got projects in the state that we live in where it takes 20 years just to redo a small portion of a highway.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do that.
I don't know. I think it's going
to
be wild.
The mix of both is going to be impossible.
Well, who do you think is going to create the most accidents? Do you think it's going to be the autonomous vehicles because of a computer snafu, or just a human error? What
no,
do you think?
I think people. I mean, right now you look, you know, how many stupid accidents do you see daily? You know, I mean, it's just, you know, I really think all cars should have the automatic braking and stuff like your car have, because that would eliminate a lot of rear end accidents and a lot of stupid errors.
Well, I'll tell you, my car excited me a lot recently, because I know that it's got that provision where I can go up to something and then it begins to shake and stop at a certain point if I'm getting close to it. Now, I've never tested it to that point where it literally stopped, but I was getting close to a dumpster because my cousin was rebuilding their garage. And as I got close to it, that car just seized right. up on me. Right. That was remarkable. You look at all these features today. I'm enjoying driving again because I have blind spot and I've got the rear camera.
Right.
I don't like the going across the lanes.
No,
thing.
That's annoying.
No, that really is annoying. But nonetheless, I love all that stuff. And now they're going to tell me that I can't drive at all,
yeah.
that the next car that I buy is going to do it all itself. What am I going to do?
You see, that's why I think the assist car is good. I think that'll prevent a lot of accidents, and our insurance should go way down once enough of those are on the road. But, yeah, I don't know. That completely driverless is we'll have to see. I
mean, not only that, John, but think about it. You know, after the 08 crash and a lot of guys in many states lost their jobs in construction and manufacturing, and then they turned to driving.
Yeah.
And I think it's a cruel part of all this that Uber and Lyft became really a refuge for a lot of people who had no work.
Right.
And now they are going to be replaced. So, I mean, we talk about this warp speed change in our society, but imagine you get this new career and you're driving, you know, an 18-wheeler or you're driving a passenger, you know, vehicle or whatever it is, and you're making money from it, and then that's taken away from you.
Yeah. I mean, the only hope you got is you got to be able to repair that, I guess, autonomous car and program it or whatever. So.
Yeah, well, we're going to need lots of other types of jobs. But, you know, this whole notion that everybody can be retrained for anything, I don't know how true that is. I mean, I think a lot of people can be retrained. But the question is, who's going to pay for that?
Right.
How are we going to be able to afford it? How many times in a life are you going to have to undergo this incredible
right.
transformation?
Reinvent
your, yeah, yeah. How many times? But at any rate, these driverless cars are going to have a lot of impacts. I mean, one of the good impacts that I don't think a lot of people consider is the fact that maybe we'll need fewer people in emergency rooms, fewer car accidents. That
right.
would be a wonderful outcome from all of this. There are so many things that we need to take into account. But I do think we're going to need a major infrastructure program to get all these roadways ready for this change. And I'm not certain that that is anything that America is prepared to spend enough money on.
Yeah, I don't. You see, it all depends on how the car senses where it's at.
Mm,
you know that?
Absolutely. I mean, how intelligent can they be built to be?
I mean, they're working on, you know, that intelligence, you know, to think better, you know, think faster than us. But I don't know.
Well, it is on the horizon. And the fact that it's not just Ford and it's not just Nissan, but it's companies like Apple building a huge facility
yeah.
and Google.
Right.
I don't know what an Apple car looks like. I have no idea. I mean, is
you want a Macintosh?
Yeah, a Macintosh. is Siri going to be talking to us throughout the process? I mean, while she's driving, I have no idea what any of these companies can do in terms of the look, the style, the feel, the touch. I'd imagine that they're really good at making products we like, but yeah. I have no idea. Do you?
No, it's kind of spooky.
Well, the government's been studying this, John, because they think that this is going to be so profound. Millions of people affected by these autonomous vehicles that they did a study in the U.S. Commerce Department, and we've got one of the gentlemen involved in making that study. David Beatty is with us, and he is one of those individuals studying this on behalf of the federal government because they really want to understand the impacts primarily on the workforce, and that may mean some change to your job. So listen carefully, and you are going to learn a great deal about the future of your car.
On the line with us on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com is David Beatty, and he's with the U.S. Commerce Department, and they have been studying the impact that they see going forward of the driverless car, the autonomous vehicle. And David, why is the federal government studying the impact of the driverless or autonomous automobile, particularly on the workforce and the many occupations that are touched by this?
Well, Larry, first of all, I want to thank you and inviting me to share my research that I and my co-authors, Regina Powers and Cassandra Ingram, did. We work in the Office of the Chief Economist for the Commerce Department, and part of our mission is to provide timely economic analysis, not to make policy recommendations, but to, you know, analyze economic trends and so on. So that's why we did this research.
And that must mean that you see this as being a really important trend going forward.
Well, certainly, I mean, there's a lot of press coverage about artificial intelligence and robotics and other kinds of automation technologies. You know, a lot of concern, especially in the press, about what will happen to people's jobs if these technologies are widely adopted. And so it seemed like it was a good topic to try to show, at least identify the occupations for which driving is an important task, and then kind of trying to understand better who these workers are and what their characteristics are and so on.
And some would say, well, the glass is half full because it will make certain jobs. Others say it's half empty because a lot of people will lose their jobs, particularly if they drive only as opposed to drive as part of another service occupation. How differently did you look at that in terms of somebody who themselves are only drivers, though it's a wonderful career, obviously, and very well compensated in many cases, versus those who use their automobiles to do other things?
We used something called ONET, which is the Labor Department-funded website, which stands for Occupational Information Network, which has a huge amount of information about job characteristics in different occupations, you know, about knowledge and skills and working conditions and so on, and we use that to try to get a sense of how many workers have driving as their primary core task versus others that use driving kind of as a means to deliver the services that they actually perform. And we found, we thought it was very interesting, about 1 in 9 workers or 15.5 million are employed in jobs for which driving is an important task. And of these, 25%, 3.8 million, are motor vehicle operators for whom driving vehicles to transport goods and people is their primary work activity, like truck drivers, bus drivers, taxi drivers. But interestingly, there are 3 times as many, about 11.7 million, that use railway vehicles to deliver services or to travel to different work sites. They include first responders, construction trades, repair and installation, home care aides, and a bunch of other types of jobs. So we thought that most of the focus that people have had has been on the workers that primarily do driving as their key, you know, most important task in the job, but maybe shed some more light on these other workers for whom driving is kind of a means to an end rather than an end.
Right, exactly. And, of course, there are many drivers, David, who, you know, they do other things. In other words, they have to unload, they have to do inventory, they have to maybe load the trucks and so forth. And those people might be primarily drivers. Then, as you say, you've got all these other people who might do personal care work, police officers, real estate agents, and they're always driving around. And yet, if they didn't have to drive their car, they would still need to go to a home. They would still have other work that they could be doing if, in fact, the car was driving itself.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's what we thought, that those workers might be able to make phone calls or work at their computers or do other kinds of tasks, and or just simply be better rested and less frazzled by traffic and things like that, and focus on their jobs more.
Exactly. Like someone today who might be a big CEO who's sitting in the back seat and doesn't have to worry about anything that's going on in the front. So workers' productivity in those cases, those who are not primarily now drivers, might increase their productivity.
Yes, that is a real possibility. Of course, we don't have the data to really prove or really forecast any of these things. I mean, it's just we're just kind of inferring these possibilities based on you know, what types of things people do when they travel around and deliver services to various places. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I've got to believe that the federal government is looking at this as inevitable to some extent. I know that there have been fits and starts in terms of experiments with driverless cars in various markets. But when you see the type of investment that is going on from tech companies to car companies, I mean, this seems rather imminent. Is there anything about your study that suggests that we have a time frame for how this is all going to roll out, thus the impact on any displacement or whatever might occur as a result?
Well, we don't actually have any data on that, and we're not engineers, we're economists, so we kind of have to rely on what other people are saying about this. But, well, first of all, it seems like various aspects of the driving, you know, includes a lot of subtasks, and some of these subtasks might be supplemented by or taken over gradually by various artificial intelligence.
Oh, absolutely. They're already being taken over. I know that there's certain cars that parallel park themselves. That's one that I've got to get, David, because I have one that does warn me if I'm getting too close to a car going forward or going backward, and whether there's somebody coming up on my blind spot. And I really do appreciate all these technologies. So we see them already starting to be folded in to the car experience today.
Yes, and then the more advanced features where the vehicle might try to intervene in case an accident might be imminent, or try to warn a human driver that they have to pay more attention to something coming up, or even just totally taking over the driving experience, that's something that we can only speculate at. I mean, some people are saying that full automation may come in 10 years, and some people are doubtful that it'll ever be 100%.
Well, one of the things that fascinates me, David, is when we are teaming with people still in their cars, still in the driver's seat, and we have autonomous vehicles, I really wonder what that transitional period is going to look like and over what period of time and where the accidents are going to occur. But I know that's not something that you'll want to speculate on. I'd love to talk to you about the dislocation. Will it fall disproportionately on men rather than women, given the fact that men are in many of the driving-related professions?
Well, I can't really speculate yet about displacement for several reasons, I guess. One is, well, you know, it's kind of trying to look into a crystal ball that we don't have, but also it's likely that autonomous vehicles are not going to be overnight adopted, you know, and go sure. immediately from zero autonomy to 100%. It's likely that it'll probably take quite some time. I mean, there's already, industry already has like $160 billion worth of investment and motor vehicles in their capital stock, and it's probably not going to just overnight be replaced. So that's one thing. So that gives workers, I think, a lot of time to consider other options and look at other possibilities and maybe develop other skills that could enable them to, you know, find other employment. I mean, I think it's autonomous vehicles are kind of, I think, uniquely something that people know is coming down the pike, so to speak, whereas other types of technologies like robotics and factories and so on, maybe people don't see that. It's not really out in the open, so people might have less of an ability to try to figure out what to do to mitigate the effects of those types of technologies being adopted.
But okay, let's talk about that, because in your report, and you talk about, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3.8 million people who drive taxis, trucks, ambulances, other vehicles for a living. You say that if businesses embrace autonomous vehicles on a large scale, the workers in this category are, quote, more likely to be displaced from their jobs. So that means that they need to add more value to the experience overall. And again, I'm not saying that at the beginning of the trip or the end of the trip that they're not going to be needed, even if the trip itself is done by virtue of this artificial intelligence.
Well, yes. I mean, certainly if it were to be rapidly adopted, those workers are the ones who would probably be more directly affected. But it's possible over time that their jobs may change, you know, instead mm-hmm. of just driving, they may be delivering more services, for instance. And so it's kind of hard to tell. But since they their main activity is driving goods and people from one place to another, they're more likely to be impacted, I think, one way or another than people who don't drive on the job or who do drive on the job, but for which it's kind of a means to an end.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. You say also, or I shouldn't say that the Commerce Department says, but we are aware that in many states today, the occupation that is in the majority for men is in some realm of driving, whether it's a construction truck and, again, trying to get cement to a job or whatever it may be. I mean, this has got to be something that the entire society has to be focused on to some extent, because we're already nervous enough about outsourcing of jobs, nervous enough about that robotic workplace in terms of clean manufacturing. This is something that we've got to, as a society, begin to grapple with. Is that why the importance of this study?
Well, yes. We wanted to kind of see, get a sense of how more or less resilient different types of workers in different occupations might be in the face of technological change. And as you point out, the motor vehicle operators for whom driving is the core task, they're overwhelmingly 88% of them are men, and they're about 5 years older than the typical worker in the economy, and their education levels are much lower. You know, less than 8% of them have a bachelor's degree compared to 27% of other on-the-job drivers and one-third of all workers. And 46% of them have just a high school diploma compared to about one in four other workers. So furthermore, the kinds of skills that are required for their job require less judgment, complex problem solving, social skills, and so on. And those are the kinds of skills that are becoming more and more in demand as time goes by.
Oh, so that's interesting in terms of if there is dislocation, might be a little more complicated to get them back into the workforce in some capacity.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All right. Well, that dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront, so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And stay in touch with us on both Facebook and Twitter at Trends Podcast. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter. That's right. Where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well,
not
you can
us,
direct message us
news
at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
I find it somewhat ironic that Lyft and Uber have really become options that people didn't have before to either supplement their income or really to make it a primary focus of their income during a period when there's been dislocation in other industries. And yet very quickly, those particular areas, Lyft, Uber, these personal transportation services may go the way of autonomous use as well, therefore shutting down an industry that was just ramping up for workers.
Yeah, so though the time frame for which that all happened, it's really hard to tell. There was an interesting article in the Times, New York Times this week about truck automation and how that's likelier to happen sooner than passenger car automation. even that is expected to take quite a number of years. And it may be that only certain parts of, you know, of a taxi trip can be automated and other parts might not be able to be automated, I guess, depending on how much of it is done on a highway versus a...
Oh, so we still might have somebody there who has to monitor the situation. Well, it's almost like GPS when I think about it. I only really need GPS for a small part of many trips, like the last mile or last 2 miles. But boy, do I need it at that point. So perhaps the human being is going to be needed at some point along the journey.
Yeah, that's a possible scenario, certainly. That's an interesting point about GPS. I never really thought about that, but that's true. You're right.
By the way, it's interesting, and I don't know that your report really gets at this, but there was another report called Rethink X, and it concluded that 90% of all driving in the U.S. will be transportation as a service by 2030, although they will utilize only 60% of the cars. But having said that, what I found really interesting was the idea that if we imagine these autonomous vehicles are going to be safer and help us to avoid injury, and thus we perhaps will see emergency room use down because there won't be as many traffic accidents. Have you thought about the ancillary industries that driving, bad driving, distracted driving, driving while intoxicated might have an impact on?
Well, we haven't done that so far in our research. I mean, I think that would be a very fruitful kind of next stage sort of thing to look at are these ancillary or kind of second-order impacts of self-driving technology on other industries and occupations. But that hasn't really been our focus so far, at least.
Yeah, it's interesting. This report says, since cars won't be in wrecks, the number of people required to repair them will be radically reduced. There are 228,000 auto repair shops, so we're looking at those workers being affected. But they also talk about what will happen in the emergency rooms. Well, this is all good. I mean, there are many different impacts to any of these ripple impacts of technology. And when you see various fields, can we run through some of the fields that you determine would be most affected? I know that tractor trailer truck drivers, of course, but give us some of the others that we might not have even thought of in this case.
I think you pretty well covered core motor vehicle operator type jobs, truck drivers, driver sales persons, which are like pizza delivery people, and other kinds of delivery jobs, taxis, ambulances. To the T is not driving it itself, if they have a specialized driver for that. And then among other occupations for which driving is important, but it's not their core thing. I mean, we have personal care aid, security guards, like I said, police, automotive service technicians, construction trades like electricians and plumbers. And so there's like a very, very mixed bag of jobs that you also mentioned real estate agents and so on, that very diverse group that might be affected and might have higher productivity because it can kind of focus more on their
core, part
of their job,
You know, if somebody is listening to us on America Trends podcast, by the way, we're talking to David Beatty, and he is with the U.S. Commerce Department in the Office of the Chief Economist. They've been looking at the impact of autonomous vehicles. If somebody is in one of these impacted fields, have you looked at how they might make themselves more valuable to their employer so that their job might not seem so easily reduced to automation and thus subject to a loss? Is that something that over time we really need as a society and to you as a representative of the federal government to look at?
Well, it's hard to speculate about this sort of thing. I mean, there is a lot of evidence that demand for skilled workers continues to increase, and obtaining new skills that are in demand might help, you know, mitigate the effects of or possible job displacement or down the road. But exactly how that'll work or which skills make sense for workers to invest in, I don't know, it's kind of beyond the scope of our research. And we don't make policy recommendations, but just try to inform, you know, policymakers and the public about these kinds of trends.
Is there much that we as a society, I know that the federal government's been talking about a lot of infrastructure projects, is there much that will require workers, construction or otherwise, to get these roads ready for both those who are drivers and driverless technology? Is there a lot of adaptation to the highways that would be required, thus perhaps adding some jobs in this changeover?
Well, that is possible. I mean, you know, it definitely makes the job of automating driving easier if roadways were more standardized in some fashion and less, you know, kind of surprise type situations that might be encountered. You know, if the environment can be really controlled a lot more, then it might make it easier to adopt these technologies. But I couldn't speculate about how many or whether there would be additional jobs created by that need or that desire to try to standardize or, you know, the driving environment.
Yeah, it would seem, though, we'd have to do something along those lines. Some of the roadways are a little bit idiosyncratic and built up over time in different ways. What about when we look at the different types of vehicles? You referenced that New York Times story, so that trucks might be in the vanguard of all of this, but we're really talking about cars, buses, and trucks. And would they all potentially be impacted to the same degree, or do you see any more research going on in terms of one type of vehicle over the other, or is there a greater savings in the private sector such that they're moving much more rapidly toward one area or another? Maybe that is the trucks that you were referencing.
Yeah, as far as I know, I mean, I think probably trucking industries, or the industries that use trucks, I should say, probably have the biggest financial incentive to invest in these technologies. I mean, not just to potentially reduce labor costs or redeploy their labor in some more productive way, but also to avoid property damages and, of course, injuries and fatalities for drivers and from other drivers on the roads and so on. So, whereas for general passenger car use, there might be less of an incentive to go into that for you know, individual households to adopt that technology.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of people say, you know, you're going to have to pry my steering wheel out of my cold, dead hand. Or maybe I'm borrowing a phrase there. You did say that operating the motor vehicle in your report, that some of the people who do that might have difficulty finding alternative employment if their current jobs disappear. I would imagine that some people in the federal government and policymakers, and you're not among those, would want to look at your material, look at this report, and say, well, we need to start thinking about what we're going to be able to do, because there are a lot of people affected by this, and they have been heretofore gainfully employed in moving goods, services, people around. So I would imagine that this report of yours might get their attention.
Well, I hope it gets everybody's attention. Yes, I think that to the extent that it helps inform, you know, both the public and policymakers, then hopefully the better.
Yeah. Was there anything that you saw in this that surprised you, David, having looked at the data and how many people are involved in this industry and some of the impacts it may have? Anything that surprised you?
I think the main thing is that how many jobs there are that involve driving, but for which it's not the core, the main focus. I mean, there are three times as many as the number of workers, the truck drivers, taxi drivers, and bus drivers, and so on, for which it's the core occupation. And these workers in these two different categories are very different. I think the ones that for which driving is just kind of a means to an end, they tend to be better educated and have more of the kinds of transferable skills that are in greater demand in our economy now than compared to the counterparts that mainly do driving as their key task.
Yeah, absolutely.
Job.
And I'll tell you, though, David, I have a lot of respect for these truck drivers. When I see them on the road and I think about the long hauls and the pressure to get there on time, and yet they're in the same congested place we all are. And to me, I could never drive one of those big rigs, I will tell you that. So whatever their skills and however transferable they are, I know that's not something that I'd be capable of. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for coming by today on America Trends Podcast to share the content of your report. If people want to read the entire report, how do they do that?
Well, our website is ESA.gov. And if you do ESA.gov/reports, then you get all the reports that our office has produced.
All right. Driverless cars, the wave of the future, and how quickly they will be here, we don't know. But we've all got to prepare, and it's going to be an interesting and brave new world. David Beatty, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Larry, and thank you for sharing my work with your listeners.